434-1790, the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. I continue to be amazed. WhatsApp message says, good afternoon, Mr. Dennis Johnson. I'm a regular listener to this call-in program, with you included. And it always amazes me how you select certain callers by the tone of their voices to become provocative and confrontational with your tone. Changes occasionally with callers, but you appear to be always pleasant and tolerant and non-challenging with Muhammad, consistently so, and certainly other callers that you welcome into your fold by their tone of voice or by who they are in society. You're not as genuine as I thought you were after all. I don't care if you choose to respond or not. Maybe you're under instructions. Okay. Okay. I am happy that you choose to judge me by the tone of my voice. Richard Lodong Hode said, when I get consideration, whoever that is, I come on nice and smooth. And when I have no consideration for a while, Kathy Walcott used to have to run with the alcalado to sap my head. Well, Kathy not here, but I have a little rubbing alcohol so I could sap my head. Sir or madam, I really don't care about society. I never have. I never will. I talk to people depending on how they talk to me. If I choose to challenge someone, I do. If I choose to not challenge them, I do. I just respond the way I feel when the person says something that I feel I should respond to. Enjoyed the show. Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
Yes, sir.
How are you today, Mr. Johnson?
I am abiding like the shepherds in the field.
Okay, sir. I have an issue I would like to broadcast on the air. Mm-hmm. Now, the issue is about BLM, right? Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. right? And I've been listening. There was a lady before that called, before the other caller, and they gave her many points when she CFU, the certainty that she CFU. Because you are a gentleman, and I believe that you do listen. And what you have just read, but whoever put on WhatsApp, whatever they just said, that's a person that is in denial.
So leave them alone. I read it because they wanted it read, so I read it.
Okay.
Tell me.
Yes, sir. But your listeners BLM. Know who you are and what you are. Now, I have a letter here. I went to the Denny march. On the BLM march on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And from what the lady just told you, her experience, I experienced what she experienced on Saturday. I felt a moment of joy and happiness to see black people come up to represent themselves. The crowd was not large due to the fact that the people using the COVID as the excuse to curtail black people and to hold them back. Now, because of what she said, I go on to an issue here that I put on Facebook on Azari Walker page. Mm-hmm. And when you're done, you could go on it and you could look and you could read certain things I've said. All right? So I have two issues I want to put on the air, and I would like you to listen to me carefully with the first.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The first is this, right? And I wrote this here because our prime minister said she don't jump on bandwagon. So right, I took right. the initiative because on Saturday, Denny was speaking certain things that I agree with and that a lot of Bajans will agree with when they hear what's going on. Right? So listen to me carefully.
Mm-hmm.
Black Lives Matter is not a bandwagon, Mia. Stripped of our independence and self-perseverance for over 450 years, our history, our dignity, and respect for ourselves was easily erased. And in the absence of freedom, black men and women were denied or defined not by themselves, but by their captors and the circumstances in which they were forced to live. Yet we toiled on in silence before. In silence that eventually rose from the thousands of unmarked graves to give us a voice through Brastak. Not through Brastak, but through Bassa. But I can use Brastak inside here, right? By giving a voice through Bassa. And we getting a voice through Brastak right now at this moment in time. Black Lives Matter. In silence that rose from the empty bellies and surged from broken hearts as Nanny Craig. Because she stood beside Busta because there was babies that was hungry and starving within that era of enslavement. The black people, you understand, lives did not matter. So she stood up and said, black people lives matter. Black lives matter. A silence that rose from the silence of the hidden and forgotten, broken by Sierra and Gil. You understand? We were silent because they didn't even want me to read. And Sierra and Gil said, there is a God. And black people need to experience this God. Even though it was the white man God, she defended it and said, give us that. So that we could find solace or whatever within. Because we had a religion and it was taken from us. The silence of the abuse and torture which moved Marcus Garvey to stand up and say, UNA, Universal Negro Improvement Association, we need to come together. Marcus Garvey stood up because black lives matter. The silence of persecution and impoverishment heard by Clement Payne, and he came to Barbara and said, no, you can't do this. These people are underpaid. These people know they've got families too. Black lives matter. It mattered even to Clement Payne, slave from Trinidad to come to Barbara, and the Bajans here under Grantley Adams didn't know that. The silence of the wrong accused, the overworked, and the underprivileged masses of war is sleeping lying at Alabama. Who became the father of this nation because you said independence. Erbar said independence because Busta first said it. The black lives mattered because Erbar said, yeah, we're going on, we go back a couple of years in 1816. We can't go beyond because that history is hidden. Because the white people hate it. They hate it to keep me in slavery. I read people can stand up and say, ask a foolish question. Why you want to move a statue? Nelson. When Nelson is the man that went and fought to keep the British Empire intact, to keep black people in slavery, colonialism was to make sure the French don't take over what the English had. And that was black people in slavery. We were economics. We weren't people. We were described or prescribed or scientifically analyzed as no humans at all. We were subhuman. But they go on to see, right? It's so that is now echoing all over the world. Black lives matter, black lives matter, black lives matter. It's so that will never ever again be silenced because black lives matter. So tell me, for me, Tim Barbados, that black lives matter is not a bandwagon that she could say.
Yeah,
I just want you to hear me and Barbados to hear me.
No problem, sir. The reason why I pulled you up there is because I know that last part of that sentence will be removed. That's why I pulled you up. No problem. I listened, sir, and I heard it, and I will go and check the writings with a lot of passion, too. Brastax, good afternoon.
Dennis?
Yes, it is.
How are you today, man?
I am being good, and you?
I don't think you're going to get carried away.
You think so?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No.
Fair enough. Tell me, what's up?
I am persuaded to call you because of Mr. Nasser and you can... the conversation you had about the Jews.
Okay.
Now, according to the King James Version, there was a man called Jacob,
right.
And he had 12 sons.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the names of the sons was Judah.
Right.
And that's how...
the word Jew came out.
Right, that's how they think.
Mm-hmm.
All Jews are Israelites,
mm-hmm.
But not all Israelites are Jews.
Right.
You understand?
Uh-huh. I follow you.
Uh-huh. You understand?
Only those from the tribe of Judah.
Right. Mm. Well, after
some converted.
After time, mm-hmm. You had the tribe of Benjamin that joined.
That converted, yeah.
And the Levites.
Right.
Because the Levites were like the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get any land. The other people had land. But if people read, I think, if they read 1 King 12, 21,
so it ain't a matter of reading, you know, sir. as I asked Brother Nasser, I've heard people interchange the words Israeli and Israelites over and over and over. Are they the same people?
Listen, the Israelites were carried captive into Assyria.
Right.
136 years before the Jews were carried captive into Babylon under Nebuchadnezzar.
Mm-hmm.
And the Israelites, which were called the Lost Ten Tribes,
right,
by modern historians,
right,
they were called the Lost Ten Tribes. They never returned to Samaria, which was their capital. When they were carried captive, the people from Assyria took people from there and put them into Samaria.
And carried them.
Okay, and those people migrated, the Israelites migrated after time. And I mean, if you read, there's a book that was put out by Mr. W. Armstrong called United States, something like that, and Britain. You will find that book has a lot to do with the history of the Jews and the Israelites. Because after a certain amount of time, you have to do some reading to understand this. I know you like reading. But after time, the Jews returned to their capital, but the Israelites didn't return. So I just called to clear up that part. I just called you to put that.
That on. No problem. I thank you for doing so, sir, especially the part where you said that all Jews are not Israelites, all Israelites.
Right, because they were 12 tribes.
They had
different names.
Yep. So the problem that I think with the Middle East and the understanding of the history of that particular part of the world has to do with the political, geopolitical changes that have been made to the places there and the changes in names, where sometimes when people read old documents, including the books of the Bible, the changes in the names of the places,
right,
they literally have to sit and look at a map and try to make the adjustments because the geopolitical lines have changed the configuration of the area. And it is unfortunate that I think that's the reason why the conflicts that we see today continue to exist, because there are people who have religious ties, who have family ties, who have social and other ties to various areas that, for political reasons, the lines of demarcation have been redrawn and changed. And I don't know that it's ever going to end.
One of the things I look about the Bible, Mr. Johnson, there are 66 books. He talk about 26, but there's six. I mean, and I understand what he meant.
Maybe.
I like him. You know, I think he has a good mission. I hope he keeps this up. But the Bible got 66 books.
Uh-huh.
There's 66 books, 39 and 27. 39 the old and 27 the new.
Right.
You got 1,189 chapters. You got 260 and 929 in the old. You got 31,001 verses in the Bible.
Spend a lot of time on this.
You got 73,692 words. So, I mean, you cannot just think reading one part of the Bible and think you understand the Bible. And not only that, you should be led. You should be led. And when you come on the air, I don't like people come on the air and saying things that people didn't say.
Right.
They have to be careful.
I try to, when I know, keep them on the straight and narrow. So I got to ask you this question, though, sir. Since you've gone into it the way you have, is it that for religious purposes or to get people to perhaps convert to a particular way of thinking, that the analysis you talk about, the historic side of the biblical story, is sometimes ignored?
Yes. But, Mr. Johnson, to get people to change, you have to change their thinking.
Their heart, yeah, I know.
You've got to get their thinking changed. If you try to do all, you can give them the whole world. If you don't get their thinking changed, they'll be the same. And you know that.
So I know that. And when I try to explain to people that's why sometimes I don't say what they want me to say, or I don't argue the way they want me to argue.
Yeah,
it's because, I mean, the conversation I'm having with you, for example, could never be confrontational because you're giving me information at a certain level. If you called and said to me, "You, Mr. Johnson, you're always wrong, you're there telling people," I would change the way I listen to what you tell me because that's human nature. But I sometimes get, I'll tell you why I make this statement. Eh? There are some people who are well-meaning. I don't think they mean ill.
Right.
But the manner in which they try to get the message across sometimes draws more attention to the messenger than to the message. I remember once listening to a Roman Catholic priest talking about poverty, and he repeatedly said, God said, blessed are the poor, or Jesus said, blessed are the poor, but he did not mean bless the conditions under which the poor lived.
Yeah.
And when I had a chance to talk to him, I asked him, where Jesus said, blessed are the poor? He said to me, go read the Beatitudes. I said, blessed are the poor in spirit. He didn't say, blessed are the people who don't have. And he said to me, where did you get your theological degree? And I said to him, rather sarcastically, not the same place you get yours. And then,
right.
Of course, then we got into an argument.
That was a good answer.
No, well, it was me being caustic. So, but the point is, I mean, if you want to talk about poverty, and if you want to say that, you know, the conditions of the poor are, you know, not something we should tolerate, we should try to help them out of the poverty. To me, don't pick that particular line, because that's not what the line says. But, you know, sometimes, as I said, because, you know, people perhaps want to get you wrong to their way of thinking or whatever, they pick a line and they run with it. And, you know, sometimes you let it go and sometimes you just feel like being mischievous. So you say, you know what, let me stick my toe in this one. But I like the fact that you've put the historical perspective
to
it as well.
Yeah, and if anybody want to read the Kering, as I told you, First Kings 12:21, and see that there was going to be a war among the Jews and the Israelites. And that's after Solomon's death, with Jeroboam and Rehoboam.
Okay.
And they will find out that, all of that. What I tell you is there in the Bible. Is I have never written the Bible. A Bible, so that is in the Bible. Thanks
so much. I thank you very much. It was an enlightening discussion. 4341-790 266-4862, or you can send an email to brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. WhatsApp message says, good afternoon, Mr. Johnson, BLM. With the tearing down of monuments, are we going to tear down the institutions and buildings associated with slavery, theories, or history? Can we sanitize our future by trying to blot out our past? We need leaders with vision and moral fortitude. History is told from the viewpoint of the victor, not the vanquished. Slavery and colonization happened. As a people, we need to seek better for ourselves. Where are our scientists, economists, agriculturalists, artisans, and innovators? Are we a nation of mendicants and thieves? If so, our systems have failed. John Stout is our technical operator producer. Dennis Johnson, your host. We go until 2. Brasstacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Johnson.
Sir, good afternoon to you.
How are you, sir?
I am trying to be good.
Oh, great. Mr. Johnson, I have just a brief one I want to engage you on.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, there was much talk about the Auditor General's report, mm-hmm. and I think you did have some reference to it today in your program as well.
Correct.
In passing. And there was a lot of focus on the financial dealings of the last administration and the matter of contracts with the Barbados Water Authority,
mm-hmm.
where it said that a number of the contracts did not follow professional financial conduct.
Mm-hmm.
Where I would want to engage you, Mr. Johnson, would you have any idea or can you put an estimate on the cost of the facility at St. Lucie, the COVID facility at St. Lucie? Because I can't recall what cost was attributed to that facility.
I haven't seen a price on it. I saw how fast it went up, who worked on it, but I didn't see a cost on it.
Exactly.
I haven't seen
it. I can't recall a cost being mentioned. It could have been, it missed me, but I believe no way I can recollect where a cost was attached to it.
But
however,
do you know whether it was done? Do you know whether it was done free of cost or not? I don't know either.
It would be interesting to let us as the public know too, if there was some donor or someone who would have contributed it to donated it to us. That would be good. and to probably acclaim them for their generosity. Mm-hmm. However, I had the pleasure continually of listening to your radio station, and this morning I listened to a feature which the radio station carried, and during that feature I heard a gentleman spoke about his participation in the project, for which he indicated that he received a telephone call to commence work and to have the facility completed. And during that dialogue in the feature, he indicated that while they were even working towards completion of the project, no contract or anything of the sort was signed. And it bothered me a bit that he would come to the public areas and say a thing like that, and especially in a time when we are talking so much about Auditor General's report and things following the just protocols relative to financial prudency and that sort of thing. I am wondering whether this project will appear in the Auditor General's report for next year or at any point for not following financial propriety.
Hold on. Be very careful what you say and how you say it. Because having said that, you wonder if it's going to turn up in the Auditor General's report, and then to follow on by what you just said, will make it appear as though the Auditor General selects on who did it. And that is not what should go out.
No, not in that case at all.
Good.
I'm not
trying
to complicate that at all.
Okay. I just worried about the juxtaposing.
All I'm saying is that I believe major contract, it's my belief that major contract may engage the Auditor General's attention given to make sure that we would have followed the right process in awarding and having them assigned and that sort of thing. That's my understanding of the process. I could be wrong. I would be willing to be enlightened by someone who might be more knowledgeable about the process. But I would want to know whether it followed the strict financial guidelines relative to the awarding of contracts. I did recall that the gentleman said that he resigned and to work on this project. And to me, it did not, I'm not sure. What are we doing? Because I don't hear the figure. And is this a project? The project that I'm seeing, for the size and the magnitude of that project, I am of the opinion that it will fall well within the realm of engaging tenders and that sort of an offer.
If there was a price paid for the work that was done. If there was a price paid for the work that was done.
Well,
I keep putting that in because I don't know.
Right.
You see, the reason why I keep putting that in because I don't know is because a figure was quoted for the St. Lucie District Hospital. I saw a price being quoted for that, but I've never seen a price quoted for the Harrison Point location.
Right. But at some point, money have to be exchanged for the works that have been done. To the laborers, to the people, whatever. So somebody have to enter, given that it is a government project or entity, that or it would be donated or whatever to the people of Barbados. Someone should tell the public how we came about this project. Was it a donation from an international body? Was it a donation from local enterprise? How did we finance this project? How did we come into this project? I welcome the project. I listened to some of the previous speeches relative to the project, that it will serve a purpose beyond COVID in the case of emergencies and that sort of thing. But at least tell us, how did we get it? How was it financed?
Okay.
Because we want to maintain this financial and fiscal management that we are having, that we eliminate any opportunity or any vision or any possibility of what was being mooted all along about corruption and all whatnot. We want to eradicate that. So tell us how we come into the financing of this project. Just one quick other thing, Mr. Johnson. Before financial woes at this point in time throughout the country, prior to the COVID, I often asked when I had an opportunity to call the program as to what are our government's plans relative to regenerating the productive sectors of the country, because we often talk about what a sound foreign exchange or position we have, but I never ever heard how we propose to generate the foreign exchange that would be needed to meet the payments for the borrowings that prop up for foreign exchange. And as a result, now in COVID, I am still placing that question on the table as to what is it that government is going to put in place to re-engineer the productive sectors? And the added question to that would be, what are those sectors that government envision as the sectors that will generate the kind of revenue that this country will need to take it forward beyond COVID, apart from just road work? Those are some things that bother me, and I would like to know how our administration is focusing on those areas. Tourism right now is totally decimated. I don't see it returning, not to any capacity that it previously had, until another year or year and a half. To again absorb the volume of workers that it previously did.
Isn't that what the administration invited the former finance ministers to work on?
Well, yes, I think it was something along those lines.
Well, there you go. I don't know that I've presented a report yet on what are some of the things that they would like to see implemented.
Right.
But I think the reason for asking the former finance ministers was one of the reasons, certainly, was
to
plot the way forward.
Right.
To what are the productive sectors? Where are we going to get the foreign exchange to pay off our loans? Where are we going to find the foreign exchange to support our lifestyle? Those have questions that have been on the table. Certainly, I put them on the table for as long as I think I've been sitting in this chair. It seems I'm saying too long. But the problem...
One last thing before I go. During the 2018, latter part of 2018, well, mid-2018, there was a lot of talk about an area in Barbados that persons thought was cut off from the rest of the country, an area called White Hill. We used to hear almost on a daily basis persons commenting and complaining and travailing about the woes they were experiencing. Buses couldn't get them into the area. Postmen couldn't get into the area. It was as though they were cut off from the rest of Barbados. Houses needed to be relocated. Roads needed to be fixed. Water wasn't being able to be supplied. Oh, there was a litany of woes that were coming from in that area. Can someone tell us whether Mr. Payne was able to have these things resolved now under the new administration? Because I don't hear anything anymore about White Hill and whether these problems have been resolved. And at least if those problems have been resolved, I believe that your program should have been commended and thanked for being able to allow those persons to voice their problems and get attention to them. But unfortunately, I'm not hearing anything from the people in that area as to whether the problems still exist. And I'm not hearing from the representative now that he is in government, whether he's been able to get the problems resolved. Would anyone be willing to share any light on that as well?
So, well, what I do know for sure is that certainly sitting either here or in the producer's chair, there was at least one or two calls from one of the voices that certainly I have associated in the past with the White Hill issue, and I think they were speaking about some issues that they still have regarding, I can't remember if it was water or transportation on the occasions that she called. But, you know, once you continue to monitor the program, I'm certain you will hear the voices going one way or the other, because we allow all voices to contend, as we have in the past. Brass Tacks, good afternoon. Thanks for your comments, sir. Hello?
Yeah, good afternoon, Mr. Johnson. Good afternoon, Mr. Johnson.
Good afternoon, sir.
Yeah. Person you had on earlier, speaking about the book, that was Mark, right? I'm calling from New York. I only know the guys.
The person that I had earlier talking about what?
The book, he was writing the book. He was writing a book.
Yeah, it was Mark Williams. That's, yes, sir.
Right. Okay. Listen, I'm in a position to have him sell a couple of books. I don't know what time it's going to be ready. Stuff like that. So, if you're going to come back on here, let us know what time these books is going to be ready and stuff like that. So I can give him my information. I'm going to buy this next month if everything works. So,
no problem at all. Hopefully you won't be quarantined for the entire time.
Yeah, that's what I'm watching all the time. Yeah, Blue said it's okay, but we just wait up the 5 minutes now to see what he's going to call and stuff.
Okay.
This is your friend from New York. I listen every day. Every day I listen. But I can't get in every time.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to let Martin know that I can, I like how he talks, you know.
He's been around for a while. I mean, 80 years of being involved in lots of things, entertainment, radio, advertising. Yeah, he's politics. He has quite a story to tell, I'm sure.
Right. I was in New York for about 30 years. So
okay.
I just called my friend. He said that he used to run for politics or something like that. He was giving me history on it.
Yeah, he did. He actually was in politics.
Yeah, I would like to sell. I could get 20 off him right away, and I got a puppy down there. Each one of my guests, I will give him a complimentary. Yeah.
Good.
Because we could arrange that for him.
No problem.
My name is Connolly Warner.
Okay.
I will give you my information. When I hear him again, I listen every day, so when I hear him again, I will get the information.
Yeah, sure. No problem at all. Leave it with John, and I'll pass it on to him. Always good to hear you, sir. And, yeah, let the folks overseas know that they can't get through on the phone. I got 1, 2, 3 free lines at the moment.